from deep inside your radio.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, big news this week in the so-called news media. Apparently, a bunch of people at the cultural side of National Public Radio have been told to take their culture elsewhere. They've been booted. At the same time, the folks at NPR said, well, no, this means we're going to do more cultural programming, in a sentence that one senior producer there described with the single word Orwellian. And but the thrust of the story, in the at least the New York Times, was that NPR wants to, you've heard all those funding credits at the end about the expansion in California. Well, this is what it's about. They're going to expand here in Southern California, not in the home of the homeless, but right next door in the summer home of the homeless, Culver City, and spend more energy covering the business of entertainment. The business of entertainment, ladies and gentlemen, about which I would suggest, ladies and gentlemen, they have a bit to learn. But less about that later. Hello, welcome to the show.
You know you got trouble when you call on the phone. A stranger tell you that your baby ain't home. Oh boy, about to get a blues attack. Baby's on the sly, sneaking behind your back. You know you got trouble when you knock on the door. Another one slams at the back of the porch. Oh boy, about to get a blues attack. Baby's on the sly, sneaking behind your back. You know you got trouble when you walk in the hall. You see your old picture face against the wall. Oh boy, about to get a blues attack. Baby's on the sly, sneaking behind your back. Know you got trouble when a man bring the mail. The dog don't bark, he just wags his tail. Oh boy, about to get a blues attack. Baby's on the sly, sneaking behind your back. Know you got trouble when you go downtown. All the guys at the bar wanna follow you around. Whoa, whoa, boy, about to get a blues attack. Baby's on the sly, sneaking behind your back. Yeah, baby's on the sly, sneaking behind your back. Oh, boy, about to get a blues attack.
If you are wondering what I'm gonna do while you are sleeping, am I sleeping too? Well, I'm just sitting here loving you. Close my eyes and loving you. I'm just sitting back, sitting here loving you. I have been wondering just what I would do if I weren't sleeping. Had I not found you, I'd be outside finding you, walking all the avenues finding you. But I'm just sitting back, sitting here loving you. Now the reasons never send me running round. Fingers on my forehead couldn't calm me down. She can even get me up and on my feet. When I got to take care of some business on the street, I have been walking all my streets along.
All my streets along.
I would keep walking, keep from going
home.
I couldn't quite clearly conceive of you.
Now I can't conceive of ever leaving you.
Cause I'm just sitting back loving you. Loving you, loving you, loving you. If you are wondering what I'm gonna do while you are sleeping, am I sleeping too? Well, I'm just sitting here loving you. Close my eyes and loving you. Cause I'm just sitting here loving you, loving you, loving you.
Well, hello from the edge of America, from the home of the homeless. I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to the show. Okay. They could learn that you do a story about a movie when it's still in the theaters. They could learn that about the business of entertainment. They could learn that, ladies and gentlemen. But now, right on to a regular feature of this broadcast.
We're so sorry.
The Apology of the Week. This is a good one. I think you'll like it. Cardinal Roger Mahoney of Los Angeles said just a couple of days ago he erred when he transferred a priest accused of molesting children to Cedars-Sinai Medical Center about 14 years ago without telling hospital officials about the allegations. In his first public comments on a sex abuse case involving the local archdiocese, Mahoney said he never should have assigned Father Michael Wempe to Cedars-Sinai without informing hospital officials that he'd removed Wempe from his parish and ordered him to a New Mexico treatment facility for evaluation and counseling. After the treatment, Mahoney said he was told Wempe could be trusted to work as a priest if he were in a supervised job without access to children. When he assigned Wempe to Cedars-Sinai, the cardinal said, he did not know the hospital had a pediatric unit. You know, those darn hospitals sneaking those pediatric units in. This is the best apology ever. He didn't know the hospital had a pediatric unit when he assigned a pedophile priest to it, you see, ladies and gentlemen, and that would be his mistake. I think that was a mistake on our part then, not to simply tell them of his background, Mahoney told the local dog trainer. That should have been done. I take responsibility for that. 14 years later is so different, said Mahoney. If that had been today, he would have been out of the priesthood. Cedars-Sinai officials learned Friday about the past allegations against Wempe. Representatives of the Archdiocese met Friday with top officials of Cedars-Sinai. So, you know, how are you supposed to know that a hospital has a pediatric? You know, you think they're for old people, don't you? Isn't that what a hospital is for? I would think so. Anyway, that's the apology of the week. We have now, ladies and gentlemen, because I didn't get to him last week. I want to make sure we get to him this week. Often imitated, seldom duplicated, tales of airport security. I don't read them often from the paper, but this is so good. We'll start with this one because it is from the papers. It's from the Aspen Daily News. Hello, Aspen. A 14-year-old boy believes he may have contracted Giardia after security personnel at an Aspen airport checkpoint instructed him to drink from a 1-gallon Gatorade bottle he was bringing aboard a plane. The bottle was filled with local stream water, which the young man says he collected to get extra credit in his biology class in his hometown in Pennsylvania. A spokesman for the Transportation Security Administration said it was unfortunate Elliot Gosko became ill, but it was the boy's responsibility to tell personnel about the bottle's contents. Says Mike Fergus, an FAA spokesman, there's no way the screener can know what's in the bottle short of asking the person and then taking their word for it. In Gosko's case, there was no communication, Mike Fergus said. If we had been told it was creek water, there's no way we would have asked him to take a swig of it, unless we had reason to believe it was something else. Gosko, in a telephone interview, said he became nauseous on the airplane after swallowing the stream water. Stream water, particularly in the springtime, is known to cause Giardia or Salmonella because of parasites in the water. He said he didn't question the screener's instructions to drink because, quote, I was just following orders. He said security had him drink the water during his third separate security screening. That came after he'd boarded the Northwest flight only to be instructed along with several other youths to depart the aircraft because proper boarding procedures weren't followed. Then the head of security made a search of his backpack and found the Gatorade bottle. I had the feeling, said Gosko, that if I wouldn't drink it, he would take it away from me. You don't miss your creek water till it makes you nauseous on the plane. From a listener, Dear Harry, I recently flew from Philadelphia to Rome via US Air. In my carry-on bag, I had a Nikon body, 4 lenses, a strobe, an electric razor, a shortwave radio, and headphones. It must have looked like an electronic bouillabaisse on the X-ray. The bag went right through without comment. But because the alarm went off, sensing a single roll of 35mm film in my pocket, I was subjected to an intense body search and many questions. The other amusing thing was listening to the black leather-clad Philadelphia cops laughing about the National Guard soldiers who were standing around trying to be useful. Our military looked ready, for anything with their rifles, pistols, anti-tank grenades. The cops were laughing because they said all the soldiers' weapons were empty. That's not me saying that, you know. Dear Harry, I thought I'd share an experience I had with LAX security, not LAX security, but the LA airport security a few days ago. Some United flights depart from an area that passes through an area under the control of the Immigration and Naturalization Service. Waiting for my flight, one INS agent stopped by the gate, showed his ID, and entered the corridor that goes without further checks to both airplanes and the INS stations on lower levels. Another INS agent, however, passed through security without showing any ID. The gate attendant was busy with passengers. Thus, a human being with a sidearm passed into a secure area without any ID check. He was, of course, uniformed. Still, no one even glanced at him. Hello, Harry, from San Francisco. Eric writes, my true tale of airport security. A friend and I were in Brazil for Carnival last February. As I have in the past, I purchased several liters of homemade hooch, the sugarcane alcohol cachaça. I gave 5 liters to my friend. He carried it in a large, transparent drinking water container as carry-on luggage. He took a flight from Brazil to Miami without incident, but boarding a domestic flight in Miami, the security folks took interest. After learning it was almost pure alcohol, they classified the beverage as a munition and confiscated it. My friend relayed the story to me the next day, and when I flew home on a similar route, I put a similar amount of cachaça in my checked luggage. All 5 liters made it home without incident. I guess the lesson is to always check your alcohol. Thank you. Dear Mr. Shearer, my name is Daniel. I'm 17 years old. And I often visit family in the Bay Area of California. Just recently, I was in the airport about to board a plane to Oakland when I was informed I had been randomly selected to be searched by security. I stepped to the side where I opened my luggage and my backpack for them to look through. I was also wearing a jacket. I keep mints in one of the pockets of my jacket, and the tin always sets off metal detectors. So before they passed me over with the detector, I told them that I had metal in my jacket and asked if I should take it off before they began. They said I should. After the search was done, I collected my luggage and boarded the plane. Not once did they check my jacket or ask what was in the jacket that would set off the alarms. They merely thanked me for telling them in advance because, according to them, it's faster when the detector doesn't go off. Tales of airport security, ladies and gentlemen. For your listening... whatever. And now, when the Simpsons, America's favorite dysfunctional family, visited Brazil last week, they made some offbeat observations. The cartoon characters found that Rio de Janeiro is a city where all men are bisexual, where fearsome monkeys roam the streets, and tourists are kidnapped by taxi drivers and mugged by children. The ironic humor was par for the course, according to a London newspaper. Unfortunately, the Rio Tourist Board did not see the funny side and is preparing to sue Fox for damage to its international image and loss of revenue. The issue threatens to become a diplomatic incident. Which side should I testify on? The Brazilian president, Fernando Henrique Cardoso, has entered the fray, claiming that the cartoon brought a distorted vision of Brazilian reality. The episode was watched by more than 11 million Americans last week. Okay.
I'm over here now, ladies and gentlemen. Just went over here
for the merest moment to get all of this stuff. Because there is news about digital television, apropos of news about the media there, apropos about Fox. A News Corporation whistleblower, gives me the chills just to say those words. A News Corporation whistleblower, has claimed that a software subsidiary of Rupert Murdoch's empire directed an employee to leak secret codes belonging to its closest rival to internet pirates. You know, I've told you about this. Canal Plus, part of the Vivendi empire, is suing Rupert Murdoch's empire, claiming that secret code leaked, enabling people to get Canal Plus pay TV for free. Well, now, this is the whistleblower saying, it happened not by accident. Oliver Kummerling, a software security consultant, says in a written deposition in a California court that Chris Tarnowski, a Murdoch employee on the West Coast, arranged for Canal Plus codes to be published on the internet. The allegations would, if true, blow apart the Murdoch company's defense that it was not a party to the hacking suffered by the French company. It will also exacerbate tensions between Murdoch and Jean-Marie Messier, whom we had on Celebrity Boxing just a couple weeks ago. I don't know how you could exacerbate tensions worse than that. Mr. Kummerling, whose company is 60% owned by the Murdoch subsidiary, claims to have been told by NDS, that's a subsidiary, employees, that the Canal Plus code cracked by NDS technicians in an Israeli laboratory was sent to Chris Tarnowski, a Murdoch employee, who had connections with the internet piracy community. The same employees told me that it was agreed that Mr. Tarnowski should arrange for that code to be published on the internet, he says in his deposition. A couple weeks ago, the chairman of Fox was saying that internet piracy was a bad thing. Now I'm confused. But I'm not as confused as after I read you this. FCC Chairman Michael Powell, son of Colin, exerted new pressure on the TV industry to speed up the rollout of digital TV, challenging to meet a set of comprehensive deadlines. The background of this, don't you? Powell's proposals are designed to put an end to industry bickering by giving all participants goals to meet. He urged the four major networks, as well as HBO and Showtime, to digitally broadcast at least half of their primetime schedule this fall. He also asked network-affiliated stations in the 100 largest U.S. cities to upgrade their equipment to receive and broadcast digital signals by New Year's Day next year. Powell wants cable systems to carry some digital programs by New Year's Day at no additional cost to subscribers. Finally, he suggested rollout dates over the next 4 years for TV manufacturers to step up productions of sets that include digital tuners as well as set-top boxes for older TVs. Of course, as you know, without copy protection mechanisms, all the digital sets sold up to now are useless. But he doesn't mention that. Doesn't say anything about that, does Mr. Powell? It's called a surprise move. Here's a comment from a listener. I don't think your comments on the government's HDTV disaster has yet to bring up what are we going to do with all of those obsolete television sets. Recently, says this listener, I tried to throw away a broken television. It can't be done. Televisions are deemed hazardous waste because of the lead in the picture tube. The city will not take them at all. Almost no one will take them. Can you imagine all of those TVs that are going to be thrown out? Well, yes, I can. Channel 11 in Chicago went digital, high definition, with a performance by the Chicago Symphony. To the handful of those who own HD receivers, the transition is a milestone because the HDTV channel of public television in Chicago will be pledge-free. Yeah, for how long, babe? For how long? That would be my question to you, ladies and gentlemen. There is a watchdog group that looks out, pays attention to, I should say, the spending of Congress on matters mainly of concern to local districts. It's called PORC. You're familiar with the concept. And I think everybody on talk radio has basically made their living for the last few years pointing out how the Democrats love to spend. You know, that's the plaint always. The Democrats, they're the spenders, the big spending Democrats. So in this report, I'm sure the other talk radio people have talked about all the Democratic spending, the spending for projects in the districts of Democratic senators and representatives. But gee, isn't the House controlled by the Republicans? Yes. So here's some spending. Here's some pork for Republicans. $29 million for agriculture-related projects in the state of the chief Republican on the Senate Appropriations Committee, Ted Stevens of Alaska. $23 million for projects in Mississippi, thanks to the ranking member of the Senate Agriculture Appropriations Committee, Republican Tad Cochran, including $978,000 for advanced spatial tech. You know, and you read any of these, they sound silly, but they're probably, somebody thinks they're a good idea. $8 million, almost $9 million for projects in the state of Senate Appropriator Kay Bailey Hutchison, Republican of Texas. Hey, Mitch McConnell, Republican of Kentucky, got $6 million for projects in his state. He's on the Senate Agriculture Appropriations Committee. He wasn't saying cut those expenditures, was he? I don't think he was, ladies and gentlemen. $44 million for projects in Judd Gregg's state. He's a Republican from New Hampshire. He's on the Senate Appropriations Subcommittee. For the Mount Washington Technology Village, he got some money. $73 million in commerce-related projects for Ted Stevens in Alaska, including realigning railroad tracks at the Elmendorf Airport or Air Force Base. Ted Stevens is doing great work for Alaska. Pretty amazing. Oh, another apology. Gee, how could I miss this? A mistake at Independent Radio News in London left 258 commercial stations without news of the Queen Mother's death. Some time back, the editor in charge of news supply has sent an apology to client radio stations after a technical blunder meant the stations missed the story. That's a bad one to miss. Queen Mom dying. Kathleen Willey, who accused President Clinton of making an unwanted sexual advance while she was a White House volunteer in 1993. Yes, there are second acts in American life, Mr. Fitzgerald. She'll be hosting a weekly radio talk show. I think it's already started. Willie has the noon to 2 p.m. slot for a call-in show dealing with local and national issues at WRVA in Richmond, Virginia. Her explanation? I need a job. Oh, and one more apology. The Science Journal Nature has concluded that a controversial article it published last year on the discovery of genetically engineered corn growing in Mexico was not well-researched enough and should not have been published. That article had reported that corn from Oaxaca contained genetically modified material, although Mexico hasn't allowed any to be grown since 1998. The initial study offered evidence that the genes spliced into corn plants were unstable. The editor's note does not distinguish between the two aspects of the study, so we don't know which finding they're apologizing about, but they did apologize. And finally, ladies and gentlemen, as we look at the top of the week's news, marriages in which the husband or wife is a jailed felon are less likely to end in divorce than conventional unions, according to the first ever study of prison relationships. Only 1 in 9 weddings between criminals in jail and their partners ends in divorce. This is almost 3 times more successful than the national rate. This is for Britain. Says a counselor, prisoners' relationships can work reasonably well because they don't have to worry about paying the bills. The outside partner also knows where the prisoner is. It's very difficult to be let down. This is LeShow, and you know that this is a weekend fraught with tension in the Middle East. Secretary of State Colin Powell belatedly sent to the Middle East. I say belatedly because some time passed after the outbreak of hostilities before President Bush announced the dispatch of Secretary Powell. Powell met after some delay with Yasser Arafat. No particular progress reported. He's continuing, is Powell, his meetings with officials around the Middle East, trying to bring an end to the hostilities. This follows by about a month the trip by Vice President Cheney to many of the same leaders. His mission was to try to get support for an attempt to take out Saddam Hussein. That trip was widely reported as unsuccessful, and many of those leaders told Cheney that, of course, that there would be no support for the United States on taking on Iraq until there was a solution to the Palestinian situation. Of course, that situation has gotten, if anything, less solved in the intervening time. Meantime, President Bush is up at Camp David this weekend with his advisors, trying to assess the situation, trying to see where to go from here, perhaps even taking a call from his dad.
Enduring Eaglet.
Hey, 43, you're repeating code name. What the hell kind of operation you running over there?
Well, 41, we have been a little busy.
Listen, the White House is a large enough operation to be completely busy and still generate a fresh code name every day. You know, a matter of fact, in my administration, as you well remember, we changed code names after lunch.
Okay, well, we got a lot of folks up here at Camp David for the weekend. Condi's here.
Yeah.
Dick Cheney came back out of the bunker for the first time since he came back from
getting a new hiney hole cut in by every Arab head of state he was meeting with over there. Listen, 43, if I thought for one minute,
yeah,
Cheney thought of himself as a diplomat,
yeah,
never in a million years would the man have been forced on you. You know that.
I know that. And
yeah,
I think he's learned a valuable lesson from the experience of being humiliated in all the major capitals of Arabia.
Oh.
You know, we got diplomats by the bushel busload. We got only one Dick Cheney, and he's much more valuable to our nation inside the bunker than outside of it.
Yeah.
You know, if we want to send somebody over there as a sacrificial lamb to just get ground up in that that sacrificial lamb grinder they got over there, you know, hey, that's why we got Colin Powell.
You know, Colin's a good man.
Oh, yeah.
He's going to get you a ceasefire. You watch.
You see, 43. Colin's like you in some ways. You know, neither of you understands the value of moral clarity. You know, you don't negotiate with evildoers any more than you negotiate with alcohol. You strike them out. You retire the side. You walk off the mound and into the showers, and you know, you let the Europeans do the groundskeeping or the peacemaking or whatever you want to call it.
Look, son, yeah, if this was a black and white world, the good Lord wouldn't have invented color television.
Well, yeah.
Sure, you've found it out by now. This country's got a lot of fish to fry. You know, some of it's good, pure fish, clear eyes, nice color, firm flesh and all.
Mm-hmm.
Some of it's kind of spoiled, you know, been in the back of the truck on a sunny day for too long. But still, it serves our interests to keep frying it.
You know, I do watch the briefing DVDs.
Well,
I mean, sometimes I even turn on the alternate audio and listen to them in Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm up on the debates about values versus interests. I know that, Rumsfeld and Cheney and all the really heavy hitters have an agenda just as much as Cohen's gang of diplomats does, but sir,
yeah.
And you know, I only call you sir when I've got the greatest respect for you, but you got tough with the Israelis. What did it get you?
Well, it got us Oslo.
Okay, all right, and Oslo was a good thing in its time.
Yeah.
I'm not criticizing Oslo, you know. I mean, I'm sure some folks thought we had Oslo all along, but, you know, if that's what it took, okay. But aside from Oslo, okay, what it got us was Bill Clinton's cakewalk through the delicatessen. And, you know, even though it's not my job to do nuances, I'm not unaware of them. I mean, a couple weeks ago, well, we were hammering Arafat to criticize the bombers in Arabic.
Mm-hmm.
And our people were reporting back that he wasn't doing it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was the one who raised the question of whether the guy even speaks Arabic. So
okay, look, when Powell meets with Arafat,
mm-hmm.
Now that Rumsfeld and Cheney and Wolfowitz and Pearl are going to be yanking his leash like crazy,
okay.
He's your Secretary of State.
Uh-huh.
Now, he's got to come back with something.
Yeah, although, you know, like Dick Cheney himself said, he came back empty-handed and the world didn't come to an end. And like, I know you hate to hear this, and heck, I hate to say it. I must sound sometimes like a compact disc that just keeps playing the same sound over and over again.
The broken record.
Yeah, that too. But hey, 41, our moral clarity is compromised more than anything else by the need to finish the little job you left undone in Baghdad.
Right.
I mean, Dick Cheney took those Heine hits for you.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, you should have seen his triglycerides when he got back. I mean, Jesus, I haven't seen a medical chart look that bad since the Angels tried to sell us Fernando Valenzuela.
Just saying,
mm-hmm.
Arafat is not Bin Laden.
Short Condi's walking you through all this, but you just want to emphasize that Mr. Arafat has to come away from this with something other than powder burns and the highest popularity rating in the Arab world since King Farouk married his third starlet. You know, get Arafat on the company's payroll at the very least, or some aid, rebuild the schools. It's something. You know the real tragedy of all this, 41?
What's that?
That the Palestinians don't have their own oil. You know, then they wouldn't need our aid. They could stand on their own 2 feet, and we could have moral clarity. See, 41, big difference between you and me. You're here to do a job. I'm here because I have a mission. I've come to know that. I wasn't put here to be Mr. Let's See How Many Shades of Gray Can Dance on a Pinhead. I was put here to take a stand, draw a line, and stand on it
mm-hmm.
after it's drawn.
All right, fine, but this thing requires the art of making people think they've gotten more than the other guy when neither of them has gotten anything. Now, Colin's good at that, you know. He let Schwarzkopf think he won the Gulf War.
Hey, 41, just because I lost the Middle East ball in the sun for a little while there, you know, doesn't mean we're not going to end up catching it.
Okay. Condi's up there with you, right?
Condi's here, Cheney's here, Wolfowitz is here, Pearl's here, Rumsfeld went out for a walk, but he's here.
All right, just look, just give this thing a chance. You know, you can go after Saddam, I don't know, second term.
Yeah, pace myself a little bit.
There you go.
Okay, 41, well, look here. We put the ball in Colin's hand. It's his to win or lose, and we're going to manage the hell out of the thing, okay?
Okay. You give Laura my love.
Hey, you give Mom mine. You know, you remember that movie Lawrence of Arabia? We were just watching it last night. Something I never knew.
Yeah.
Lawrence was his last name.
Interesting. You keep in touch.
You too. Bye.
To the woods today. thoughts today. You better go in disguise. For every bear that ever there was will gather there for certain, because today's the day the teddy bears have their
just a little shameless self-promotion, ladies and gentlemen, because you can still see the movie Teddy Bear's Picnic this weekend. Still, this weekend in Los Angeles and San Francisco. No guarantees, you know, about next weekend, so word to the wise department. Now, ladies and gentlemen, how normal are we? We're so normal now that a 24-7, that is a 24-hour day, 7-day-a-week humor channel at a local hospital installed because humor helps healing, is not being spread to the other hospitals part of the chain, because that the humor on the channel has been declared too male-oriented. Current lineup includes Marx Brothers, Laurel and Hardy, Abbott and Costello, Little Rascals, Three Stooges, and the Honeymooners. There's a committee of a dozen people arguing over more suitable female-oriented humor. Their single contribution so far, I Love Lucy. And how normal are we? I thought we weren't going to care about this stuff anymore. Apparently we still are. Barbara Walters taking some time out from caring about the news, because she's a newswoman. Isn't that what? Yeah, she works sometimes for the news division. She is, there's a benefit called the Inner Circle for some cause, some good cause, in New York City. And they do a satirical show like a lot of benefits do. And reportedly, Barbara Walters is furious at the satirical show at the Inner Circle benefit because it mocked her unnaturally youthful appearance. She was the guest of Mayor Michael Bloomberg. Walters, according to reports, was all smiles during a song about facelifts that made fun of Greta Van Susteren. This was sung by Mary Alice Williams, former CNN anchor. But her smile disappeared when Ms. Williams sang the line, Barbara Walters, apropos of facelift, Barbara Walters, she's had 82 on her television program that's not produced by the news division, The View. Walters called the performance tasteless and lacking in humor. She mentioned it again on Wednesday. And part of her outrage was, she said, Mary Alice Williams had applied for a job with her. So Barbara, but not only did Barbara Walters take time twice on The View to express her objections, she went into a New York City, reportedly, went into a New York City recording studio to answer the charge in detail in a song of her own.
54 facelifts may seem like a lot. Talk about reeling in the years. Tightening a tittle, smoothing a jot, facing down all of my fears. It hasn't been easy and it hasn't been fun going through what I've gone through. But one thing I'm proud of, like a dad of his son, it's been 54, not 82. How could you face 82 facelifts? What could be left to lift? Your scalpel can't be your daily companion. Surgery is a gift. If I had 82 facelifts, my nose would be on the floor. My brow wouldn't furrow, my lips wouldn't bend. I'd look as bizarre as Liz Taylor's best friend. I'd take 2 hours to cut and a half year to mend, so I won't have 82 facelifts. I'm happy with 54. Who could perform 82 facelifts? Seeing the same new face. You can't get rid of that many wrinkles without something to put in their place. If I had had 82 facelifts, I'd have to go back for more. It would be as addictive as tobacco or crack. My skin would have been pulled halfway down my back. I'd be subsidizing an obvious quack. So who needs 82 facelifts 54. I'm happy with
Well, ladies and gentlemen, that will conclude this edition of Le Show, getting more normal by the minute. We'll return next week at the same time over these same stations from New Orleans, Louisiana. We'll also be here over NPR worldwide throughout Europe on the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the American Forces Network, on shortwave at WBCQ The Planet, 7.415 megahertz, and on your computer. A little computer thing that never works. Whenever you want it, around the world at two locations, www.harryshearer.com and www.kcrw.com. And it'll be just like everybody going along with the FCC Commissioner's voluntary digital plan, if you'd agree to join with me then, would you? Alrighty, thank you very much. Uh-huh. The Sea Crane Company is proud to support Le Show, offering long-range radios, antennas, and more for over 25 years. The Sea Crane Radio Light and Science Catalog is available online at ccradio.com, that's ccradio.com, or by calling 800-522-8863. The email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. Le Show Internet Services by Steve Mack. I even think there's a late show tonight. What? The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of SAS, a satellite service of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless. Where we'll teach NPR something about the business of entertainment.